The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Frequent guest on the Hayes Advantage attending the meeting in Vienna, Jason Schenker, president of Texas-based Prestige Economics. We sort of make him our own Jason Schenker when it comes to the OPEC meetings. He is on the phone from Austria. Jason, good afternoon. Good morning from us. Good afternoon to you.
Well, good morning to you and good afternoon from Vienna.
So you have had a terrific time, I'm sure, and no big changes on the surface. But what's important in the conversations on the sidelines, all your contacts there?
Well, you know, I think that the most important thing that's going on here, I try to encourage my clients to think about OPEC as the central bank of oil. And like every other central bank, they're kind of crossing their fingers and hoping that the growth that everyone is forecasting for later this year, the IMF, the OECD, OPEC itself, Prestige Economics, and everyone else in the consensus that's calling for, you know, better growth the end of this year, better growth next year, they're hoping it happens. And I think that that's a bet that a lot of folks are making, including OPEC. And that's been really the big discussion here is the growth issues on the demand side, especially the fact that, you know, Europe, we are here in Europe, Europe's growth is, you know, contracted in the last quarter, waiting, hoping this year's recession is not as bad as last year, maybe even seeing some growth at the end of the year. And then there were some supply side discussions around shale oil, but I think those are a bit overblown at this point.
Well, Jason, that's what I was going to ask. How much has the conversation revolved at recent meetings over the last couple of years to the idea that the U.S. is producing more and more and may even become independent?
Well, this was actually a very hot topic, especially in the Q&A session today at the OPEC meeting and in the press conference. You know, the truth is that there is a lot of discussion around this, especially for countries that are producing light sweet that are now exporting a lot less than they used to, like Nigeria, because the U.S. is importing less crude. So some countries are more affected than others. And I think in the longer run, we're going to need that crude oil. I think right now the topic is particularly exacerbated because we're in a weak demand environment. And if we had growth in Europe that was positive, I don't think we'd be talking that much about the shale oil because we would need the oil in an environment where the global economy was moving in a positive direction.
Well, on that note, you point out in your note that you sent to us, you asked a question to OPEC's Secretary General El-Badri about the risk to oil prices if the Federal Reserve capers off and ends quantitative easing. And if this happens globally, although the United States is the one that's in line to do it, not really anybody else. What did he say and what do you think?
Well, you know, there was a very, there's a lot of concern there, I think. And what his response was, you know, in the end, the Fed is the Fed. That's exactly what he said. You know, the Fed's going to make its own decision, but it's going to keep in mind, you know, what affects the American economy, and it won't do anything to hurt the American economy, so everything should be fine. But I think that sort of statement is something that a lot of investors are thinking right now, too, as they're, you know, kind of piling into equity markets and thinking, hey, it's going to be great. But there is a very careful balance here because QE infinity is going to end at some point. It's not actually going to turn out to be QE infinity. And when it does end, there are some downside risks. And I think...
What are they, Jason? Because if they end QE infinity, it's because the economy is doing better, jobs are growing, and they can take off the training wheels, right?
Well, yeah, but and this is where there's divergence among the FOMC members. They're not necessarily speaking with one voice right now, and you've got some of the members saying, hey, you know, growth's good enough, we should stop. And look, just because we hit 6.5% on the unemployment rate, when they take this away, it's really a question, will the pent-up demand really have kicked in? And I'm becoming increasingly skeptical about what the growth prospects for 2014 look like. I think Europeans, the IMF, the OECD, I don't necessarily think they're pricing in any risk to the employment market from the costs associated with Obamacare. I don't think they really understand at all on this side of the pond what that means, if that even exists. So I think that's a huge risk that folks aren't calculating in. And, you know, I think that once the money isn't as cheap, once it's, you know, the housing market isn't as frothy, if the pent-up demand doesn't actually kick in at some point, you know, we could have a problem. So, and I think that the Fed could be at a point where, you know, inflation's going up and the unemployment rate's, you know, kind of near their target that they've said this is what we're aiming for, the 6.5%. And yet GDP growth is still in this 2 to 2.5% range where we're getting rich slowly and then there's a risk.
Jason, OPEC always says it doesn't have a particular price target. It's not meant to have one. But really, what are OPEC ministers hoping for oil to do?
You know, this is a great question, and I remember when Ben Bernanke first became the Fed chairman, and he said, no, I don't have an inflation target, I don't have an inflation target, and I think we all kind of knew it was around the 2% range, even though he explicitly didn't have a target, but if he had one, it would have been 2%. So I think OPEC doesn't explicitly have a price target, but if they did have one, for Brent crude, it'd probably be in the $100 to $120 range. And for WTI, it'd probably be in the $90 to $100 range. So, yeah.
So they must be pretty happy these days. I mean, NYMEX crude's been in that kind of low 90s range forever, it seems.
Yeah, and you know, and the Brent price, which is more important because that's really become the global benchmark as WTI is disconnected from the rest of the world market. You know, that's only briefly dipped below $100 in April for just a few days. So the prices are at a level that they have referred to as sustainable, fair, prices they've been satisfied with. You know, yeah, they, for all intents and purposes, yes.
And the global economy and the U.S. economy seem to be doing okay with that level. I mean, we are, at this level, do you consider this, okay, it'd be great if it was 10 bucks, 20 bucks lower a barrel on crude to have lower gasoline prices, but is this can we say this is not a headwind to growth?
Well, you know, at this point, with as much growth as the United States is getting in the oil and gas sector, you know, I don't necessarily think $20 lower would be better for all parts of the economy. You know, especially if we look at what sectors have seen significant growth in the last 12 months, oil and gas is definitely one of those key areas. So, would a lower price be better for the U.S.? Maybe right now, marginally. But I think as we begin to produce more oil in the U.S., it's going to be potentially less so, where a lower price might net be not necessarily that good for the U.S.
Jason, what's the potential for deals for crude being done in currencies that aren't dollars? There was some conversation a while back about China perhaps engaging in some kind of a bilateral trade agreement with Saudi Arabia or another country and perhaps not using dollars.
Well, so this is something that's been kicked around for a long time. I remember before the financial crisis, there was a lot of discussion about switching to the euro. Of course, that idea now, I think we all look at this and go, wow, that would have been really bad. And the dollar really has shown that it's king. As for switching to the renminbi, yeah, I could see the Chinese doing, again, a bilateral agreement, but it wouldn't be a traded market where they've got crude coming in at sort of a fixed price. But I got to tell you, from a risk management standpoint, I don't know if I would advise the Saudis to do that, because even with weak Chinese growth, you continue to see the Chinese currency strengthen quarter after quarter, although last year in the second quarter was a bit of a pause. But other than that, you've seen the currency continue to strengthen. And a real question is, you know, what's the natural rate of exchange of the Chinese renminbi against the dollar? And, you know, it used to be a lot weaker than where it is now. And this is actually something we were talking about at the meeting just today. And you ask, well, where is the renminbi going to be against the dollar 5 years from now? What is the natural rate? Is it 4 per dollar?
Well, how do you know if it's a controlled currency,
right?
Well,
this is the problem with a controlled currency that's coming out of a peg. You don't know. And so for the Saudis, this would be a much bigger risk, mm-hmm. because you could wake up tomorrow And, well, you can't now because of the peg, but you could wake up 5 years from now with a 20-year agreement on your pricing and find out that things have changed very drastically for the renminbi.
Jason, is there much discussion at an OPEC meeting of all the new green energy? Do they figure, oh, yeah, it's there and it's gaining some ground, but, you know, it's never going to replace good old crude oil, gasoline, natural gas, and... all, you know, well, what we do hear about some of the even Middle Eastern companies developing solar energy, wind energy, et cetera.
I mean, I think I heard someone at some point today talking about needing everything in the energy mix. One person at one point maybe hearing, you know, saying something. So, you know, in general, transportation fuels are going to remain petroleum-based for a very long time. Even the EIA estimates, even if they change the CAFE standards, the majority of vehicles in the U.S. fleet for decades will remain pure gasoline vehicles, not even hybrids or anything like that. The majority, even with a significant revision of CAFE standards, would remain gasoline-only vehicles. So, that's just it.
Sorry, Jason. Was there any talk about Iran, the Iranian economy, how it's faring since sanctions have been imposed, and whether some of those sanctions should be rolled back? Did any country mention anything like that?
No, the group's been rather reticent on this sort of topic. You know, things that tend to be this hot button politically tend to be not discussed. I think everyone is aware that the barrels are off the market. That does represent some potential future spare capacity that could come to the market. I mean, if those barrels were on the market right now, we would be in a much lower price environment.
Jason Shanker, thank you so very much. Are you going to go off and enjoy some good Viennese beer and steak? Schnitzel, there you go.
Well, there's, you know, there's a closed-door analyst dinner tonight, and I'll go to that.
Oh, well then.
Okay, well, I hope you're not eating analysts behind closed doors.
No.
With some candy, right?
Okay, bad joke. All right, Jason, thank you so very much.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.